holding on Chof Tes on the days, about 12 lines or so from the bottom. Chof Tes on the days. Line begins Ahu Gavra. That's about halfway down the wide line. Chof Tes on the days, 10 lines from the bottom.
10 lines?
Yeah. We talked yesterday about Shluchim of Gittin and whether one Shliach can appoint another Shliach. So, more in this connection. Now, who gathered the shuttle of Gittin with Vesu? There was a man who had sent a get through a Shliach to his wife. Omalei the Shliach, le'teis b'ni'aloh ad plosim yoimin. He says to the Shliach, don't give my wife the get until 30 days have passed. From when he gave it to him. I don't want you to give it to her for the first 30 days. Well, during the 30 days, there was an onus. He wasn't able to complete the mission. Also, he comes to Rabbah to ask what to do. I'm not going to be able to deliver to her at the end of the 30 days because I'm not well. What do I do? Amar Rabbah, listen. Our Mishnah had said, Chala, that if a person is sick, the Mishnah had said he can appoint another Shliach. Time am I, Mishnah to honors. So what's the reason why you're allowed to appoint another Shliach? Because of an onus. In this case, this person is also an onus. So yes, by all means, he can appoint another Shliach. How do we do it in this case? He can't wait around until the end of the 30 days. Amalei, so Rava tells him, Mesor milach kamai, you should give over the words of your shlichus to Tamehidan. You give the words over in front of us, in front of the basin. After 30 days, we will be able to appoint the shliach and give her the get. So you will right now, well, because we said that, the get is not supposed to be given during the 30 days. So you tell us now, you give us the get for safekeeping. Once the 30 days have passed and it's time for the get to be given, then we will appoint a shliach to actually bring it to the woman. Isn't it a situation similar to the case we had yesterday involving Rav Safra and the three Chachamim, where this is not a shliach directly for Gerushin? The case yesterday we had was the shliach said, I don't recognize the wife and I don't want to bother trying to find her. So the husband tells him, fine, then give it to Abba Baman Yumi and he'll be able to give it to her, but Abba Baman Yumi is not in town. So we said yesterday, we discussed the question, is he able to give over his shlichus to the Beis Din, and they will give it to Abba Baman Yumi. And part of the discussion we had over there is that he's not a shliach with Gerushin. He's not a shliach directly to accomplish the Gerushin. He's only a shliach to give it to Abba Baman Yumi, who will accomplish the Gerushin by giving it to her. So therefore, that can't work. So we went back and forth on that yesterday, whether that's in fact the case. So here it's a similar thing that Rabbanan say to Rava. This person, he's not a shliach for Gerushin. He's a shliach during these 30 days, the Gerushin can't happen. Amalavu said, Rava tells him, given to the boss of Tlosin Yemen, Matsim Agadish, since after 30 days, he himself would have the capability of giving her the get and having it take effect. Yes, he is considered even now during the 30 days, he can be considered a shliach legerushin. Basically, what it is he is a shliach legerushin. This was a side issue preventing him from actually accomplishing the shlichus until the 30 days have passed. Unlike the case yesterday, where the chachila, according to one way of looking at it anyway, that was we went back and forth on it yesterday, but according to one way of looking at it, he wasn't a shliach legerushin because the husband had told him, you know what, you don't give it to her directly, give it to Abba Baman Yomi. That's what we were discussing yesterday. That's what we were discussing now.
Now, he said that he wants to give it over. Can he make another shliach?
That's what we were discussing yesterday, yes. So that's what we said yesterday, that the first shliach will say b'fana nechtem, and the second one, since the shliach is appointed in front of Beis Din, will say shliach Beis Din. I'm a shliach Beis Din. Okay. Relax. He can't be here every day, you know. Another question. V'leichos shema pius. Fine, but if here you have a new wrinkle, you have the fact that the get is supposed to be delayed 30 days before it's given. Isn't there a chashash then that during that 30 days, nothing to do with one shliach versus two shluchim? How can even the first shliach deliver the get at the end of the 30 days? What if during those 30 days, the husband went and was misyachad with her and reconciled with her? So So Rashi says the problem is get yoshen that we discussed the other day. That once if a get is written and then the husband and wife are in yichud and there's a possibility that there was bia, then that itself makes the get possible midrabban because we have the problem gita kodim luvna that people are going to think afterwards if she turns up pregnant that she became pregnant after the get was given to her and it was
no. Why we said just after the 30 days could happen before the 30 days.
No, that's the thing. In other words, given that he gave him this get. He told him, don't deliver it until 30 days have passed. Forget about one shliach giving it to another shliach. Just the very fact that how can he give it to him with her at the end of 30 days without first making sure that there hasn't been this pious over here. Twice this earlier where we had
what's
this.
What's the difference between after 30 years or if he tells him giving it now?
So if he tells him to give it now, then there's really a chance for pious. And Rashi points out, in a regular case when a get comes, not in a short amount of time, come on. Rashi points out, in a regular case where the husband sends a get with a shliach, there's no specific time, there's no specific amount of time to wait, then the husband may figure, okay, yes, in principle I could go be Mephias, my wife, but you know what, by the time I get there, the shliach will have probably already gotten there with the get. It's too late. I'm not going to bother schlepping from point A to point B in order to have the possibility maybe I can be Mephias, my wife, and then be Mephias with her, just on the off chance that the get hasn't gotten there yet. Here he knows he has 30 days to do it. So maybe he did. Earlier, when we talked about this, Tosfos learned pius differently. Tosfos learned that it wasn't a matter of maybe of get yashin, but rather it was a matter of maybe the husband has changed his mind and decided not to give the get and been mevatelet, which we'll talk about bittul of the get extensively in the next parak. Anyway, so forget about one shliach and another shliach. How can even the first shliach give over the get? Miloitznan, don't we learn later on in the Masechta, if the husband gives a get, if he says, I'm giving the get, which will take effect as of now, if I don't return within the next 12 months, then he dies during the 12 months, how do you get? Then it's a get, because fine, at the end of the 12 months, he's not able to come. Even though, in this case, he said, the get should be in effect as of now, retroactively. So therefore, that works. Later on, when the Gemara discusses this in the Ayins, the Gemara discusses the question, B'necho Shavapiyas, don't you have the same possibility that the husband was Mephias? Yes, as a matter of fact, the Abba Mori said in the name of Rav, the case must be, that it has to be a specific case where the husband, when he's giving the get to the shliach, when he's giving it in front of Beis Din, he says, I will accept my wife's claim as if it were the equivalent of 100 Edim, that I was not there and that I was not in Yichud with her. Therefore, I have no leg to stand on later if I should want to come and be Ma'arer and claim, wait a minute, I was Mephias to get Yosha and I was Mevat or whatever, I won't have a leg to stand on. But only in that case where he did that. So in this case, with the get, with the 3 days, and this whole situation with Rava, the husband never said any such thing. So then we have this real problem, Shema Kaila, we have this real problem, Shema Pius, that he may have been Mephiaser. So Rava was embarrassed. How could I have forgotten that particular detail? Well, so in the end, Iglai Milta no, he didn't, actually. He was in Babel. He didn't have Smecha. There's a Chum in Babel on the Chachamim in Babel did not have smicha because smicha can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. So unless you had a Chacham who learned in Eretz Yisrael and got smicha there and then moved to Babel, then you're talking about the smicha ish mepiyish, the original kind of smicha that went back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That they didn't have in Babel.
They didn't travel from. You said that many Chachamim went from Eretz Yisrael.
Some. Rav Safra, for example, did, but even Rav Safra, we said yesterday, even though he traveled. So there were, and there were also, and that's what I'm saying, there were also some who were born and raised in Eretz Yisrael and got smicha there and then moved to Babel or came there for.
You can only give
smicha in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway. So no, Rava didn't have smicha, but anyway, the Rava is embarrassed. How did I forget that particular detail? Eventually, it turned out that actually there was a crucial detail missing from the case as it was presented to them. This woman was an arusa, and therefore, Amar Rava. So in that case, Rava said, actually, it turns out that I was right after all. Im Amru b'Nesua Yomer Ba'arusa. Yes, they said this possibility appears when it comes to a Nesua because they've already been married for a while. Yes, there's a real possibility, therefore, that the husband made one last-ditch attempt to be Mephias, to make up with her, to be Messiachim with her, etc. By an Arusa, it's much less likely that he would have. by an arusa. They're not really, they don't really know each other that well yet. If she was divorced, if she sent her a get, mina erusin, it's much less likely that there was a pius. So therefore, it turns out, Rava says, I was right after all. We don't have to, pius, we don't have to worry about. All we have to worry about is the shliach handing over his shlichus to another one. Fine, he is considered a shliach legerushin because it's just the fact that he can't do it during the 30 days is a side issue. There's actually, Julian Ashas over here, of Akiva Eger, references a few other places in Shas where you have cases like that, where there was a case of a din Torah that was brought to Rava, and he passed in a certain way, and then a Talmidim said, wait a minute, what about such and such? And he was embarrassed, and then it turned out that the facts actually made it that his original psak din was right after all. So it's not so much Ruach HaKodesh, but it's an example of the concept that a Rav, when he passed in Halacha, when he's passing L'Shem Shemayim, has Siyata D'Shemayim, the Eibush to help him arrive at the right psak din, even without realizing how that is. Okay, Amar Rava. Now, however, it is true, we do have the following question. Kimeshavu based in Shliach. When based in is appointing the Shliach? Befanav or Shalai Befanav? Does it have to be in the presence of the first Shliach, or maybe not? So Rashi says this is the continuation of the same case. The Rav is saying, yes, okay, we've established there's no question that we can appoint a second Shliach to take over from the first Shliach because he's sick. But, and we know Beis Din has to do it, but does the first Shliach have to be around in order for that to happen? Or can we do that even when he's not around? That's how Rashi learns it. The Rif has a different girsa, which is when one Shliach appoints another Shliach, in Beis Din, does it have to be Befanav or Shalai Befanav? And in that case, actually, what it is the Gemara, therefore, according to the Rif, therefore, the Gemara is revisiting the issue that we discussed yesterday, where the Chachamim had started asking Avimi, the son of Rebbe, does the Shliach have to be done in Beis Din or can be done outside of Beis Din? So now the Gemara would be revisiting that issue.
Because?
That's the Rif's girsa. And before we talk about
why we read it.
Because according to the Rif, that's his view, sir. And before Shem explained that actually the Rif gets that maybe because for one thing, when the Gemara says Havadik from a Boyalon, indeed we have the question, that implies we're not just talking about a continuation of the same story. We're referring back to the Mishnah. You know, the Mishnah tells us a Shliach can appoint a Shliach. Fine, but we do still have a real question. After all, we still have that question that wasn't really resolved, whether it has to be done B'fnei Beis Din or not. The answer is Hodder Pashta. Later on, Rava answered the question himself. Ben Befanav, Ben Shalai Befanav. Yes, it can be done whether in the original Shliach's presence or not in the original Shliach's presence. And in fact, Shalcho Mitam, they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael that's Takad Halacha. Ben Befanav, Ben Shalai Befanav. The second Shliach can be appointed by Beis Din whether in the presence of the first Shliach or not. You don't need the presence of the first Shliach. So in this case, in other words, this person was sick, and he's not going to be able to accomplish the Shlichus at the end of the 30 days. Fine, he's moiser, he hands over what he's supposed to be doing to Beis Din, and then at some later point, they appoint another Shliach to finish the job. He doesn't need to be there in order for that.
Not
the husband's consent. We said you don't need the husband's consent. As long as, as we said in the Shliach. No, we were revisiting the question in connection with the Shliach making the Shliach in general. The husband's consent, you only needed, we talked about in the case where the husband says, along with the get, I want you to also pick up something that she had in her possession. Then we said there's the issue with that, either according to the Shlokish, that the husband doesn't want the pekudin to be in somebody else's hands, or according to Rabbi Yochanan, that it can even passel the get if he wanted the get to be given after the object is delivered. But other than that, the husband doesn't have a say in the matter of once the get is written. We said yesterday there's no bizoyan de baal, there's no bizoyan of the husband involved because the get's already written.
Except the husband may not want that specific shia that's chosen by the Beis Din.
No, he doesn't have a say in that. There's no logical reason he would have a say in that. Another case, speaking of getting with delays. Hahudama, there was a case of a man who said, Eli, we had this at the beginning of Ksubas as well, Eli Asina Ad Plothin Yah. I mean, if I don't show up in the next 30 days, Lehevi Gita, then this get should take effect. So now, in this case, by the way, there's no Me'achshav. Here he's giving the get now, going out of town, and saying, if I don't return within 30 days, then this get should take effect at the end, on the 30th day. First day, whatever. Also, so on the 30th day, he was coming back, Opaske Nabra, but the ferry blocked him. He missed the ferry, and he couldn't get across. Yeah. Omalahu, so he called, and he says to them, Chazuda Asoy, look, I'm coming, I'm here. the get shouldn't be in effect. No, that's not called that he came. The fact is he didn't come by the end of the 30 days. Then that's it. The get takes effect.
There's no
oinus. Yes. And we learned this actually, what I was going to say now. It's actually a machloket. That's the thing. So, okay, so we learned at the beginning, We learned at the beginning of Ksubas a few different ways of looking at this. First of all, the Gemara is going to say over here, and we learned over there also, that there's a question whether Ein Onus Begitin or Yesh Onus Begitin. We had a long discussion at the very beginning of Ksubas last year about whether Onus is a valid thing to prevent a get from taking effect or not. One way of looking at it, the Gemara says, is maybe an Onus is maybe Ein Onus Begitin because of the Tznuis and because of the Purvis. We said of it as Tznuis are women who are going to be extra careful. They're going to receive a get, but they're going to say, wait a minute, what if there was an onus over here, and therefore it's not really in effect, and therefore they're going to leave themselves like onus. And the Purvis are going to say, who cares? Tznuim, no Tznuim, whatever, and they're going to, I got a get, that's it, I'm good enough to remarry without bothering to check into the details. So therefore, we want to say, Ein Onus Begitin, doesn't matter what, as long as there was a Tznai, if the Tznai didn't get fulfilled, then that's it. Doesn't matter whether there was an onus or whether it was Berotzen or whatever. That was one way the Gemara looked at it over there. The other way is maybe Yesh Onus Begitin, but only an onus that the husband couldn't reasonably have foreseen. That the ferry doesn't arrive on time, that he misses the ferry is something he could have reasonably foreseen, and he should have mentioned that in his Tznai. And if I don't come back within 3 days, provided that the ferry is running on schedule, then the get will be a get. The fact that he didn't add that detail means that the means that no matter what, doesn't matter whether it doesn't matter. Well, yeah. Or he'd have to come the day before. Yeah, he could have come the day earlier. Another case, Hahuda Amalahu Ilay Payasnalad Slosin Yoimin Lahavigita. There was a case of a man who said that I'm giving this get now, if I don't manage to reconcile with my wife during the next 30 days, then it should be a get. Ozel Paisa, so he went to try and reconcile with her, to try and, Rashi says, to try and convince her and get friends to talk to her, or to make up with him, whatever. But what you Paisa, and she wasn't willing to listen. Amr of Yosef, so the question becomes, do we say the get is valid or not? Amr of Yosef, did he give her a huge basket of dinarim, of gold coins, and then she still didn't want to reconcile? Meaning, in other words, it's not like he did everything possible to reconcile with her. He did some things, yes. He tried to talk her into it. He tried to get his friends to talk her into it. But you still can't say you still can't say that he did everything possible. So therefore, there's no onus over here. He has a valid. There's no onus over here. The get is valid, implying, in other words, according to this version. But if he had offered her a type of a dignity and she still turned it down, maybe that would be considered an onus. Ikadamri, others say, Amr of Yosef, no. According to this second version, Rabbi Yosef says the other way around. Midi talk about the dinri bar la meis of law. Does he have to give her a basket? Does he have to give her a basket full of dinri? Meaning, in other words, ha-paisa. Midi, is it true that talk of a dinner, a basket of dinner in Bar Lameis, that he should have to give her in order for it to be that he's done everything possible? Ha-paisa. He did the normal things that you would do to be mafias a person, and she didn't want. Meaning, in other words, therefore, it is a valid argument to say that it's onus. If he had a type of a dinarim to offer her and he didn't, then fine. But he doesn't have a type of a dinarim. You can't expect him to get one together just for the purpose of being mafiaser. Therefore, it's a valid claim that he tried. He tried to be mafiaser. He wasn't able to. Therefore, we should consider it an onus.
Why?
Because he doesn't have the type of.
The fact that she refuses is not necessarily called an onus.
That's according to the second version, it is. We're saying that had he had a type of to give her, she might have accepted. But he didn't have. He has a valid claim of onus. Look, if I had a tarkov, I would have offered it to her, but I didn't, so I couldn't. But it's still an onus.
You borrowed it.
Come on. A tarkov of the dinner is a huge amount of money. The Gemara mentions, for example, that that's the amount that Yehoshua ben Gamla's wife, Marta Basbaisus, gave as a bribe to Yanai to have her husband be appointed Kohen Gadol. We learned about it in Yevamos. It's a substantial amount of money. Tarkov is actually short for the word shreva kav, which means three cabin. A cav is about is the volume of about 3 pounds of water. So I don't know how much it is in terms of weight. Gold is a lot heavier than water. No, it's more than 3 pounds. First of all, it's gold, not silver. But second of all, gold is almost 20 times as heavy as water. you're talking something along the lines of so one cab of gold then would be about 60 pounds of gold. Three of them would be 180 pounds of gold, let's say. And that's a pretty large fortune. So Gemara says, Ha Commander Amar Yesh Onus Begitin, Ha Commander Amar In Onus Begitin. The two versions of what Rabbi Yosef said are disagreeing on this point. Is there a valid argument of onus when it comes to a get? I tried, but I couldn't make it. I didn't have the tzadka, the ferry was late or whatever. Or is there no taina of onus and getin? Doesn't matter. You made a tonight, the tonight didn't happen, therefore the get is a get. And so the two versions of Rabbi Yosef are differing on that point. The halacha is einonis begitin. The halacha is that regardless, it doesn't matter whether you prevented, and therefore the get is a get. Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to go. Now the Mishnah and the Gemara from here till the end of the parak are going to go completely off topic from the Masechta Gittin. We learned a couple of Mishnayos ago the concept that a person has a cheskes chayim, that when you bring the get from a husband, you can still operate on the chazaka that the husband is still alive and therefore deliver the get. So now the Gemara, now the Mishnah is going to go into a similar topic in a different area of halacha. Mishnah says, "Hamalva mois is a koyin v'falevi v'sa'ani." If somebody lends money to a koyin or a levi or a poor person, now the koyin is supposed to be getting truma from him, the levi is supposed to be getting meiser, and the ani is supposed to be getting meiser ani and leket shikha. Not leket shikha is not really relevant. Meiser ani, let's say. So what he does is he lends the money lias mafreshalayin mechelkan. The deal is like this. The lender says to one of these people, for example, a koyin, he says, I'm lending you money. You're not going to pay me back in the regular way out of your money. Rather, I have a crop growing. Eventually, at the end, when it's harvested and gotten ready, I'm going to take truma from it. Normally, that truma would go to you or one of your fellow koyin, and we'll discuss the details in the Gemara. Instead, I'm going to keep that truma for myself. Well, not really keep it for myself. I can't eat it. I'm a czar. But fine, I will be able to take that truma and sell it to whatever koyin I want and keep the money for myself. And that way and that way your loan will be paid back that way. Or he does the same thing with the levy or the same thing with the ani. Well, yeah, that's true. Okay. In the case of the levy with my tradition, he could eat it. In the case of the ani with my ani also he could eat it. Okay, right. Masa Shalayan Bechezkas Shen Kayamin, so he can go ahead and continue separating out the truma and the meiser. It on the assumption that the koyin or levi or ani is alive, but in a choy sheshama mes koyin or levi or hesha ani, he doesn't have to worry that the koyin or the levi who he made this deal with may have died, or that the ani became rich, and therefore that the deal is void. No, they have a cheskas chayim, and he can assume that they're still alive. Mesu, what happens though if taka they die? Sorech lito rishus min hayoshim. Then he has to get permission from the heirs. So what does that mean? Rashi says what it means is that, in a technical sense, this debt is not, there's no obligation technically on the Yoshim, on the heirs, to pay off this debt. We'll talk about in the Gemara the details of that. But they don't have the requirement to pay it back. Therefore, if he wants to continue this deal, that I'm going to be taking this truma or meiser that ordinarily should go to you, members of your shevet, and instead I'm going to keep it for myself, he needs permission from them in order to do that. But if he lent them in front of Beis Din, then he does not need to get permission from the heirs, because then Beis Din has the power to make all the Koyanim and Levim out there responsible for the Schoiv, and therefore that the Balabas can continue with the same arrangement as before. Now why would Beis Din, that he can sell it and keep the money for himself? Now why would Beis Din have the power to do that? What power does the Beis Din have to make all the Koyanim or Levim or Aniim in the world liable for this? Rashi says because it benefits them in that way, they'll more easily be able to find that people will be willing to lend them money. People may figure, why should I bother lending a koyin or a levy any money? Usually they're poor. What's the chances I'm going to get it back? So like this, if you know you can make an arrangement like that, and it'll keep on and it'll keep on lasting even after the person's dead, then you're more willing to lend them the money in the first place. Therefore, if you did it in front of Beis Din, then Beis Din has the power to be able to enforce the thing. And then to be able to make it that you're allowed to make it that you're going to be able to continue this arrangement, that the Yoshim are still, not the Yoshim themselves, but the Shevet as a whole, is still on the hook that this debt will be paid off. So in the Gemara, we'll talk about the details of the mechanics of that. Okay. So the first question the Gemara asks is, how can he make this arrangement? How does this work if the Truma or the Meiser has not even reached the Kohen or the Levi?
Who says
it's that's what we're talking about. He says that I'm lending you money. Later on, when I take off Truma and Meiser, he's not saying first I'm going to give you the Truma and Meiser and then I'm going to take it back from you and sell it. There's no such arrangement like that implied in the Mishnah. It sounds like the Balabas is saying I'm just going to take off the Truma and immediately, without you even being present, I'm going to go and figure out the value of it and sell it. And
what?
Well then, so what's the problem? So there's two problems. Rashi says that one problem is that Rashi says both problems actually. Number one, in what way is this Kohen first Zoche in that Truma in the first place? You're saying that you're going to be taking this Truma and selling it in order to pay off his debt. That means it has to have belonged to him at some point. But Truma can be given to any Kohen. So in what way does it pertain specifically to this Kohen that now you're saying I have the right to go and sell it on behalf of your debt? That's one problem. And the other problem is you have a mitzvah of giving Truma to the Kohen and giving Meiser to the Levi. How is it being given to them in the first place?
Well, you're giving him money.
You gave him money last month. You gave him money earlier in the season.
Oh.
But right now, the Truma or Meiser has to be given. So you have, that's the thing. You have two problems. Number one, that the Kohen has b'chlam not been zoche in it. So therefore, how could you say it's his more than any other Kohen? And number two, how are you accomplishing the mitzvah of Reishis Tzoncha Tiken Loi, that you have to give him the Truma? Well, that's what they're going to talk about. Omer Rav, Makore Kohen Olavia. So Rav says, we're talking about somebody who has a particular Kohen or Levi as a friend. So whenever, every year when he gives his Truma, he always gives it to this one specific Kohen. Every year when he has my submission, he always gives it to the specific Levi. So now how does that help? And before I talk about a number of different ways in which it helps, Rashi says that one thing is, ordinarily when a person takes off Truma, all the Kohenim out there have in mind, you know, want any of us to get it. They're all looking forward to it. Like this, if they know there's Makore Kohono, it'll be over there, they all are miyash from it to begin with. They all say, you know what, forget about it. We know we're not going to be getting it. We know his good friend the Kohen is going to be getting it. So we have nothing to do with it in the first place. Therefore automatically it becomes his. It's the equivalent of it having already come into his hands. Shmuel says that actually the case would be that he's mezakeh to them through somebody else. The same way as you mezakeh food to somebody when you make an eruv tashulin or whatever, you give the truma or maaser or whatever to one of your friends, and you say, I want you to be zoiche in this truma on behalf of this and this kohen. And so that's the equivalent of it actually having come into his rishus. So that way you've accomplished both things. You've accomplished that the Kohen or the Levi has been zoche in it. You've accomplished the mitzvah of Nisina. And now you go and take it back from the friend and you go and sell it. Ula Amar, and Ula says a third possibility, Hamani, Rabbi Yossi, that, you know what, our Mishnah would have to be like Rabbi Yossi, Da'amah also as she'ena zoche kezoche. He says that in a number of places throughout Shas, we find the concept that even somebody has not yet fully been zoche, has not yet officially been zoche in something, we still consider as though they were. Rashi gives a few examples. One of them actually we're going to have later in the Masechta. You have, for example, a case of an Oni who's knocking olives off the top of he's going to collect leket, or not like a peah actually, from the top of an olive tree. The way you harvest olives is you knock the branches with a stick and the olives fall down to the ground. Now, at that point, I said like it, then I corrected myself. It's actually peah. The peah has to be given on trees as well.
Can you hit the branch?
Yeah. Why not? No, we're talking the ani. The ani, when it's time to collect his peah, when it's time to collect his 1/60th of the tree, he climbs up the tree, he takes a stick and starts banging on the branches, and the olives fall down to the ground. Now, he hasn't made any technical kinyan on it yet. So the Mishnah describes the Gemara actually describes over there that if some other Adi comes and takes those olives, it's not technically gezel. It's not the right thing to do, but it's not technically gezel because the first Adi wasn't zoche in it. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says it is, because according to him, even though the Adi did not do any formal act of kinyan on it yet, he didn't do hagbah, he didn't do meshicha, he didn't do any of the kinyan chaser, nothing of the above, but The fact that he, even though he had not yet fully been zeuche in those olives, the Chachamim treat him as if he did. Same thing over here.
Why he's not zeuche?
Because he hasn't done a kinyan on it. He hasn't picked him up. He hasn't
to do a kinyan.
Yeah. In order to, yeah.
When it's like it or it's a pair?
Anything, yeah. There's
it's hefker, isn't it?
But in order for it to become ois hefker and become your thing, then you have to do some kind of kinyan on it. The Gemara in Bava Metzia has a long discussion about this. There's a Mishnah in Peah, for example, that mentions that the Gemara brings it in that survey over there in the first parak of Bava Metzia, that let's say an Ani sees some leket, he takes some of it, he picks up a few pieces of leket and throws it onto some more lekets over there and says, hey, now all this belongs to me. No, we don't let him do that. We actually take it away. He has to do a proper kinyan on it. When once he lifts it up, that's a proper kinyan. But yeah.
With the whole thing?
No, with each piece that he picks up. Okay. Anyway, so the same thing over here. Rabbi Yossi would say that even though this kohen has not actually been zoche in the teruva yet, nevertheless we can consider as though he was, to the extent that we can say then that it works. Again, Rashi says, according to any of Rav or Shmuel's or Ullah's reasoning, the idea would be that Chachamim made in the case of Ullah's reasoning specifically the reason is, like we said in the Mishnah, we want it to be a tekana on behalf of the Kohenim and Leviim and Aniim, that they should find people to be able to lend them money. The Gemara says, Kula Karab Le'amri. Now Shmuel and Ullah do not want to agree with that, because Mamakore Le'Kohanim, the Mishnah didn't say anything about friendly Kohanim, so you have to assume it applies to just any random Kohanim or you lend money. Kishmuel Le'Kohanim, none of them, the other two, Rab and Ullah, don't agree with Shmuel, because the Mezakah Le'Kohanim, because nor does the Mishnah say the word Mezakah either. Which, Tosfos points out that, Shmuel would say that it's much easier to say Mizaka, because then at least you're making it apply generically to all Kohanim. So it's much, even though the Mishnah doesn't say Mizaka or Makare, it's more logical that the Mishnah would be talking about Mizaka, which at least applies generically to all Kohanim, than Makare, where it's limited to one particular Kohanim. Whereas Rab feels the other way around, the Mishnah doesn't say anything about Zikri, it doesn't say anything about having to be Mizaka. So therefore, it's more logical to say that the Mishnah is talking about no zikri is needed. And why would that be? Because they're makore. Because you know that everybody knows that your truma and maaser is already going today. Okay, and ka'ula nami la'amri, and none of them want to, Rav and Shmuel don't want to agree with Ullah's reason. Because ki'chidol le'bukumin, and in general, we try not to say that a stam Mishnah goes according to one particular time. In this case, according to Rav Yossi. Yes, the halacha may be like Rabbi Yossi, but nevertheless, we want to be able to say that the Mishnah goes according to somebody. Turn it up on. Amalva Moritz, the Kohen, the Levi, the Oni, the Snapish Aleim. So somebody lends money to the Kohen, the Levi, or the Oni, in order that he'll afterwards separate out the Truma and Maestris on their behalf, Michalkan, from their portion. Like the Mishnah said, Mafresh Aleim Becheskes Shen Kayam, and he's allowed to keep on separating it using the Chazaka that the Kohen, or Levi, or Oni is still alive. And the Braisa continues with several other dinim that apply to this arrangement, different than halachas that apply to many other arrangements, to many other deals with loans. Number one, poikikimon kashar azel ve'en bevishum ribbit. In the fifth parak above Matzia, parak Ezer and Neshach, is all about the dinim of ribbit. The Braisa ribbit is just that you make up. At the beginning of a loan, you make up that you're going to pay some extra amount, an extra fix, an extra number of dollars, an extra percentage, or whatever it is. That's ribbis deraita. Then there's a whole bunch of cases that are ribbis drabana. Among them are the case, imagine that you have somebody who is going to be harvesting their crop later this year. So you say, I'm going to buy this crop from you ahead of time, and I'm going to buy it from you ahead of time, and in return for the fact that I'm giving you the money ahead of time, and that you have a guaranteed customer now for your crop, then you're going to sell it to me for a cheaper price. You're not allowed to do that. That's ribis dirabon, because it comes out therefore that you're benefiting from the fact that you effectively lent him that money ahead of time. So it's ribis dirabon.
The rest of you have to increase the amount that you get.
So dirabon is even in a case like this where there's not necessarily going to be an increase. The prices aren't fixed, but that's the thing. The drabon, what we're saying is to say that I'm buying this from you now because I'm paying you ahead of time. Therefore, I'm going to get a discount on it. Now, there are two cases that it mentions there throughout the Pesach when it is allowed to do such a thing. Number one is called Yeshloi. If the buyer, if the buyer has some of that, not the buyer, the seller rather, the farmer, let's say, has produce of that type already available. He doesn't even have to have the full amount that you're buying from him at that time, but as long as he has some, then you're allowed to make this kind of contract with him. That you're going to buy his actual crop when it comes to market, that you're going to buy it and you're going to pay him now at that cheaper value.
Why is it different?
Because when he has some, then in principle he could fulfill the contract right now. He'd be able to give you that wheat right now.
It would still be
because if he wants to sell you wheat right now for $10 a bushel, then fine, he's allowed to. There's no rivets in that. You're allowed to make up prices. The problem is the case where you're saying normally we expect that later on the season wheat is going to be $12 a bushel, but because I'm paying you early, then I'm going to have agar neter. You're going to give me a benefit for the fact that I'm allowing you to keep my money for longer, and therefore you're going to give it to me now for $10 a bushel, where if I bought it later and paid you later, I would have to pay $12 a bushel. That's also a job offer. But if he has some produce of that type already, then fine, in principle, he can pay you off right then. So therefore, that's allowed. The other case, which is allowed, is called Yotza Hashar, which is called if there's already a prevailing price. So if there's already a fairly fixed market price, the fairly fixed price is that wheat is selling for $10 a bushel. So you can say, fine, I'm paying you now. I'm going to get the wheat at the rate of $10 a bushel. Even if prices go up later, even if it should happen that the prices later on go up, and at 12, I'll still continue to get it at 10. That's allowed because at the time you made the deal, that was the prevailing price. Now in this case,
not the prevailing price.
Well, that's
the
answer. We'll get to it when we learn above Matthias. When we get there early next year, Beis Hashem, we'll break our heads over it for a good couple of weeks. Yeah. Anyway, so in this case over here, when you're lending the Kohen or the Levi or the Ani, Posikiman Kishar Azul, you can make up a price with them according to the cheap price. Meaning, in other words, you're saying, I'm lending you $100. Right now there's no fixed price yet. We don't know by the time the wheat starts coming to market whether it's going to be 10 or 12 or whatever a bushel. I'm going to make up with you that $100 is going to be considered the equivalent of the cheaper price of $10 a bushel. Even though maybe later on, I don't have any wheat yet, and we don't know what the price is going to be. It may end up being 12. I'm still going to be entitled to consider it $10 a bushel, and therefore to take 10 bushels of my truma and sell it. You're allowed to do that.
And our investment called
future. Yeah, that's basically what it is, future, yeah. So you're allowed to do that. The ain't by mishum ribbis, and there's no problem of ribbis in it. So here, normally you need yotzashah. Normally you need to be there for the prevailing price. Here you don't. Well, in theory, you don't know the price yet. We'll talk about the Gemara. We'll talk about it in a few lines why it's not a problem. Tosfos says that actually what it means when we say Poskim and Kishar Azul, you can even go below the cheaper price. You can even say you can even say, let's make the deal that I'm going to consider the wheat to be worth $8 a bushel, even though under normal circumstances it's never worth only $8 a bushel. You're still allowed to do that as well. It's still not a problem.
But again, because the market price still
doesn't exist. Well, the fact that it doesn't exist usually would make it more of a problem. In this case, you allow, for reasons we'll talk about. But Rashi, by the way, learns that these two things, the price of Gemara Kishar Azul, and Bemishum Ribbis, is one long statement. There are other Mepharshim explain that it's actually two different statements. You're allowed to arrange a cheaper price, and also when it comes to getting paid back, you're allowed to say you according to them, Poskimoy Kishar Azul means that you can say, for example, that if the prices go down, then I'm going to get more wheat to compensate for that. So it'll still come out the same dollar value, but it'll end up being more wheat than we thought it was going to be originally. The Ein Bei Mishum Ribbis would be this thing that we just talked about the forward prices. Also, the Ein Shvius Mishama. Also, Shmita does not cancel this deal. So even though Shmita has already passed, you can still continue. The deal is still intact. The Ein Bolachzer Ein Echozer. And if he, which he we mean, we'll talk about in a few lines, wants to change his mind, he's not allowed to. And one more din, this Yashua Bailim, if the owner is gave up, So let's say, for example, Rashi says the Balabas lent the Kohen money expecting that he's going to get paid back out of this year's Truma. Then all the crops were struck with a disease or whatever, and now there's nothing or next to nothing left to harvest. So the Balabas is, yeah, Shvayla Chesrin case. Oyvei is near. I've lost my chance. Ein Mafresh Aleihem. Then he cannot take Truma in the future in order to pay back this loan. Lefishein Mafreshin Ala Over, because he can't give. We'll talk about it on the base what exactly happened, but yeah, the gist of it is grew back, or maybe the following year, whatever. You can't, because you can't give Trumas based on something that was lost. Once he was Miyash already, then that's it. It's Dover of it. It's considered it's lost. It's gone. Omar, so the Braisa said, Posikimon Kashara, though, that you're allowed to make with them up a cheaper price. Last Chita. Isn't that obvious? Now, what does that mean? So Rashi says what it means is that Posikimon Kashara, though, would be that you are allowed to say. Now, we were talking about where you're saying, for example, that we don't know what the price is going to be yet, but we're going to make up $10, even though later on it might be $12. You are allowed to do the other way around, though. You are allowed to say, normally we would expect, look, I'm lending you $100. I expect to get back $100 of worth of produce, regardless how many bushels that is. The type that also Midrabanan is, let's say, we're saying that no matter what, you're going to give me 10 bushels, and if it turns out later that the 10 bushels are worth $120, I've gained $20. That you're not allowed to do, Midrabanan. But you can do the other way around. You can say, you are going to owe me 100 regardless, so if prices remain at 10, then you're going to have to give me 10 bushels. If prices go up 12, you're going to have to give me 8.5. Yeah, one's the price and one's the amount, yeah. So that shit isn't that obvious. What's the problem?
Obvious
it was. That's a lie. The answer is Hakam Ashmalon. Yes, but the Chiddush is Apa Pishalei Pasek Kamisha Pasek Tami. Actually, what the Braisa means is, even if you didn't make up such a condition, it's considered as if you did. Meaning, right, even without making that explicit stipulation, yes, we say that the amount you're entitled to take of Truma and sell it is going to be the amount that it is going to be whatever amount of produce it takes to make up that $100, regardless whether it's more or less, regardless whether it's the exact amount or less than you expected to originally. Whether the price is
specified or not specified.
Yes, then you can always do that. You always are going to be allowed to sell Truma until you've been gotten the whole loan paid back. That's the finish.
That is
not Ribbit, that's the Gemara says Chitta. But of course, because there's no way under that circumstance that you'd ever be getting more than $100. If prices are $10, then you're going to get 10 bushels. If prices are $12, you're going to get 8.5. Regardless, you're always getting $100, yeah. The aid by Mishum Ribbis, we said that there's no problem of Ribbis, meaning the other way around. If you're going to say that I'm always going to get 10 bushels regardless, whether it comes out $100 worth or $120 worth, why not? My timer, given to Ki Lesle Le Yoivle, because if the Balabas winds up not having any Truma, then the Kohen himself is not on the hook to pay back the loan. So again, the original deal was that you're not going to pay it back to begin with. I'm going to arrange to get it paid back out of the Truma. So since not necessarily is the loan ever going to be paid back anyway, Ki Yisle Nami Ein B'Mishum Ribbit. Because there's the risk that there may not be any Truma that year, that there may not be any produce that year, any crop that year, then even if there is, then it's not a problem of Ribbit. That's the Gemara also discussed.
In other words, both of them could not make a deny in case there's no crop.
Not following.
If
there's no crop, then it means that's it. The loan is a goner. That's it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And as the Gemara discusses there in Bava Metzia, various cases, how you avoid this issue of forward contract being ribbis besides for the two heterim before. There's also all kinds of complicated cases involved where the lender assumes a certain amount of the risk, and therefore it's allowed. That's the basis of the heter isker that's used nowadays when for example when you borrow money from a Jewish owned bank. And they want to charge interest on it. A large part of the heter of there involves basically that the bank or the lender or whatever it is sort of becoming a silent partner in your business and assuming a certain amount of the risk.
Because ribbis usually there's no risk. Is that what you're
saying? That's the idea. Yeah.
A guaranteed return.
Pretty much. Well, so the one that's also Ultimate Dirt says was absolutely guaranteed. I lent you 100. You're going to give me 110. But the time that's also Ultimate Dirt is where there's a very likely. Not even very likely, where there's a possibility of profit and not really any possibility of loss.
Ah.
Yeah. The Enshvius Meshamata, we said in the Braise that Shemitah does not cancel this deal. Why? Because Shemitah only cancels a loan that you're able to go and bill the guy and dun the guy. He you cancel. The whole deal is that he's not responsible for paying it back, but you're going to get paid out of Truma. The Imbalakta in a Choser, and we said if he wants to change his mind, he can't. What does that mean? Omer Apapa Leshonu, Ela Balabayis B'Koyim. That means the Balabayis cannot renege on this deal with the Koyim. If he wants to change his mind and say, you know what, never mind, you have to pay me back the normal way, then no, you can't do that because you already gave the money to the Kohen. Rashi over here is learning according to the to
an opinion. You lend the money to a Kohen and then you say you change the conditions.
Wait, no, the vote is like this. The Gemara mentions in the previous parak of Bava, the fourth parak, is all about the dinin of kinyanim and chalifin and everything. The Gemara discusses over there do we say that you're always koinib a meshicha? So for example, Reuben gives money to Shimon. That doesn't yet make a kinyan. Only when Reuben gets the object and does meshicha on it, or kinyan chater or what have you, only then is he koinib. Or you have the opinion of Reb Shimon over there who says that kol shat kesef yada yada al el yoinu. Whoever has the money has the upper hand and is able to change his mind Meaning, in other words, according to Reb Shimon, in that scenario, Reuben has given the money to Shimon. Shimon, at that point, is now able to change his mind and then say, you know what, take your money back. I want to keep the thing for myself. What? Well, nobody made Meshicha. Okay, so the Chachamim would agree to that also. But in a different scenario, you would have that even though Meshicha has been done, what if Reuben did Meshicha first and then he still has the money? He'd be able to change his mind according to Shimon. I'm a bit, that's how it is. The Gemara has a whole discussion over there, whether it's the money that's Kona, whether it's the Meshicha that's Kona.
If you did Meshicha and Meshicha's Kona, you cannot.
But if you say that money is Kona, then he could. That's the Machloikas over there. So Rashi over here seems to be learning according to the Shimon. Tosfos points out that actually this Gemara could even work according, that our Gemara over here could even work according to the Rabban, because there's nothing to do Mashiach on, so therefore there's no specific kinyan to be done. Once he gave him the money as a loan, then that's it. The thing is out of hand. However, Avo Koyin Rebalabayis in Bolak Sechoyzer. However, the Koyin, if he wants to change his mind, then he can. Fitznan, as we learn in the Mishnah there in Bavmatia, Nasam Leimoris for Leimashach Amenu Peres. If one person gives the other one money and has not yet done Mashicha on the produce, Yachalachsaba, then he's allowed to change his mind. Same thing over here, then the Kohen hasn't yet received anything and therefore he's able to change his mind. I mean, he received the money, but there's no produce that's changed. Right. Mishnah continues, the Braita continues, the Siyashra Bailim Ein Machashaleh, and if the Bailim gave up hope of getting a crop, then you can't be makrish anymore, truma, using this deal. Let's be changed to Christian Allah, because you can't give truma based on something that's lost. That's what it amounts to. The Gemara asks Pshita, isn't that obvious? Yes, it was like Tzricha de Akun. Yes, but you know what you're talking about? When the produce already dried up, when it was destroyed, it was already on its stalks. It was already, the stalks had already grown to some height. Maud tema akanta milti. So you would think then that the fact that they're already in stalks is significant. Yes, they dried out, but they still may revive and continue growing. So therefore, the fact that it was miyadish temporarily, you could have thought that it'll continue growing, and therefore maybe the guy said, oh, you've made a chesed case, that I've lost my money. Maybe not. Maybe there's still a chance. Kamash malon, the chiddush is we don't say that. Once it's dried up, and once he says violate the chesed kiss, then that's it. The deal is a goner. And even if the crop later on revives, it's a milsa d'loshchicha. No, actually, milsa d'loshchicha is the other way around. Now she says milsa d'loshchicha at that point that it should be totally destroyed. Still, once the balabas was miyayish of it, then it means already he gave up hope of ever recovering this loan, and then at that point he's not allowed to take the truma and sell it, even if it revives. Tanya, we learn in a break, that Rabbi Lozman Yaakov, how Malva Moses the Kohen Vesel Levi Vesin, if somebody lends money to a Kohen or Levi in Vesin, Umesu, and then they die, Mafra Shalem Becheskas Oisya Sheva, he can still continue this deal based on the Chazaka of the rest of the Sheva. Rashi says, meaning, they themselves are dead, but the next closest person in the Sheva, their children, if they have children, their brothers, their uncles, etc., will Yarshim. So therefore,
they will give it.
So therefore, he can continue doing the same deal. He can continue separating out his Shlomos and Maisus and then selling them and using the money to pay off the debt of the estate, of the person he lent it to. That's on the Beis Din or Mess. Same thing. If he lent money to a poor person in Beis Din and then he died, again, he can continue doing it on the basis that there are other Anim. Now, Rashi says you can't say every Yoshin, not necessarily are the Anis heirs poor people. They themselves might be rich people. But there are other Anim out there. Since the whole thing is a takana for the sake of the Kohenim and Levim and Anim, therefore you can continue doing this as well. It's not considered stealing from him.
Okay.
Because eventually, once his loan is paid off, he has to stop doing this.
In any case, he has to do it before Shemitah, no?
No, he said that Shemitah doesn't cancel it.
That it doesn't cancel.
Yes, that's because he said it's not the regular kind of loan that gets canceled by Shemitah. Yeah. Rav Achiyama Becheska Senia Erlam. Yovel doesn't cancel loans. Rav Achi says that actually what he can do is on the basis of the Aniyim in the world. What is my benayah? What does that mean? What's the practical difference? It could be benayah on near kuti. The difference is, what if there's no local poor Jewish people, but there are poor kursim? Now, you have the two opinions. Are kursim geire arayas? Are they insincere geirim, therefore not full-fledged Jews? Or are they geire emes, full-fledged Jews? Or Gemara is going according to the opinion that they are geire arayas. So the Tanakhama would say when he said Becheskes Aniya Yisrael, he means Yisrael as opposed to Kusim. If the only Aniyim in town are Kusim, then you're not allowed to continue this deal. And Mephoshim point out that the implication, actually Tosis points out, that the implication of this is that this deal is only meant to apply to the Aniyim of that city. It can't be, you can't say that it means the Aniyim in the whole world. Because otherwise, then there wouldn't. There's always going to be poor Jews somewhere in the world, yeah. So according to the Tanakhama, you can't do it on the basis of Aniyat Kursiyim. According to Rav Achi, you could. That's Aniyat Olam includes the general Olam out there, including Kursiyim.
Including
Kursiyim. Continues the right. So Hesher Oni, if this Oni became rich, Ein Mach B'Sholov, then you're now allowed to continue separating Truma and selling it based on this deal. And this person, the borrower, is not obligated to pay back what he has. He's allowed to keep what he has already. What he has in his possession already. Because the whole deal was that the loan is not being given on the basis that you're going to pay it back directly. It was supposed to be paid out of Meiser, out of Meiser Oni. You're not poor anymore, so therefore that's it.
That means
yeah.
You have to make a
tonight
if you have become wealthy. You have to pay me back.
Do
you do that?
Yeah, you can make a tonight like that. Yeah. Okay, the question is, Rabbanon Maishnal Misadol Takanto, Maishnal Ashur is still over Takanto. Why are the Rabbanon saying that if the person died, that if the Kohenim of the Levi only died, then we make a Takana and we allow him to continue on the basis of there are other Kohenim, other Levim, other poor people out there, but if he became rich, we don't say that? The answer is Mr. Shticha Ashirus L'Shticha. Dying is relatively common. Now, not totally common. We said the other day that death is not so common. There's not such a chazaka of it. But still, it's more common than people becoming rich. It's very appropriate now with the news about that. Yes. Basically, yeah. This is like what people say. If you're told that your friend died, then you can believe it. You can consider it a shorter kayam. It must be true. If Asher, but if they tell you your friend became rich, loy to Asher, don't believe it. It's less likely. The Mishnah said, mes tzarech l'tarushus, that if the Oni had died, the Kohen or Levi or Oni had died, you have to get permission from his Yorushim to continue this arrangement, unless it was done in Beis Din. Tanya, we learned a Bryce, the Rebbe Omer, Yorushin she Yorushu. This means heirs who inherited. What do you mean? Well, me, she Yorushin, the Loyalty, what do you mean? Are there heirs who don't inherit? El Omer of Yechon, and it means she Yorushu, Kaukov, la Yorushu, Shloisha Yorushu, Ksafin. It has to have to be if they inherited real estate, not if they inherited money. Because if they inherit, meaning in other words like this. So Tosfos and the Baal HaMor versus most other Rishonim disagree what part of the Mishnah is Rebbe referring to. There's two different ways of looking at it. The Mishnah talked about the case where the guy died, you hadn't made the original arrangement in Beis Din, and you have to get permission from the Yorushim. Or the case where you did it in Beit Din, where you don't have to get rishus. So Tosfos learns that Rebbe's statement is referring to that last part. That if you lent them, if you lent the original person in front of Beit Din, you don't need rishus from the heirs. Provided that they inherited real estate, because then the debt is going to be paid out, is supposed to be paid out of that real estate. So instead, you don't need their permission. You can continue the arrangement. You can continue the arrangement and have the loan paid off, so that you don't have to end up seizing property from them. But if they inherited only metalkalin, where metalkalin are not under a shibud to pay back their father's debt, then you're not allowed to continue the arrangement. That's how choice was learned. Most other Rishonim learned that Rebbe is referring to the first part, that if it was not done in Beit Din, you need their permission to continue the arrangement. When is their permission valid in order to be able to continue the arrangement? Only if they have karka, in which case the loan of necessity was going to have to be paid back anyway out of that karka. But if it was going to be out of metalkalin, even if they give permission, you can't, because who gives you permission? You as Yoshim, who don't even have the obligation to pay back this debt out of metalkalin, who gives you permission to prevent other kohenim or levim or aniv from getting the rest of the truma or ma'aser? Amar Rav Yonasan, hiniach malay machat, berga malay machat. If the father had left over a piece of land the size of a needle, meaning the value of a needle, let's say, berga malay machat. So then the creditor, the lender, is able to collect only to that value, to the value of a needle. If you left a little larger piece of land, so the size of an axe, then you can collect the value of an axe. It means, you can only do the actual amount up to the actual value of the land there is. Because again, everything beyond the value of the land, the loan is gone. No, even if you only left over a needle size of land, you can still collect even if the loan was the size of an axe, much larger. Because what happens? Let's say, for example, you take that one piece of land, that needle size piece of land from them to pay off part of the debt. They're going to buy it back with the metalkalin they have. Then you can be told of it again and again and again until the whole thing is paid off. As we had a case in Ksuvus, exactly that, where there was somebody who owed 100 zuz, and he left over a piece of property worth only 50 zuz. So the Baal Chayiv came and took that. The Yisoyim bought it back from him, and then gave him 50 to get it back, and then he took it back for the other 50. So that was a case of Katina, where the case came in front of Abaya, and Abaya said it's valid to do that. Same logic over here, then. We could say that no matter how small the piece of property is, it's enough to be able to keep on rotating over and over and get the whole loan paid back. Thank you.